Good evening, everybody. Stefan Molyneux from freedomain.com. And I'm a little torn up tonight. 18th of February 2026. As it stands at the moment, a high risk of imminent military conflict, potentially starting in the coming days or weeks if ongoing nuclear negotiations fail. Iran has rejected U.S. demands on uranium enrichment and ballistic missiles, and there is a rapid U.S. military buildup in the region. Indirect talks between U.S. and Iranian officials in Geneva concluded on February the 17th, which is yesterday, with some good progress on guiding principles, but significant gaps remain. Both sides agreed to exchange drafts and resume discussions in about 2 weeks, but Iranian Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei publicly rejected key U.S. demands, emphasizing Iran's right to nuclear capabilities and deterrent weapons. President Trump has urged Iran to make a deal limiting its nuclear and military programs or face potential attacks, with recent statements escalating warnings. A Trump advisor reportedly estimated a 90% chance of U.S. kinetic action in the next few weeks. U.S. forces are preparing for a potential massive weeks-long campaign resembling all-out war rather than limited strikes, with hundreds of aircraft, two carrier groups, and air defenses deployed across more than 20 locations in the Middle East. That's right. The Epstein files are out, and now it's war! Of course. Top officials have briefed Trump on readiness for strikes as early as this weekend, February 20th to 21st, though no final decision has been made and timelines could extend. The Pentagon is repositioning personnel out of the region to Europe and the U.S. in the next few days as a precaution against Iranian retaliation. Iran is conducting naval exercises in the Strait of Hormuz, deploying missiles and drones to deter attacks. Analyst note, this stems from broader 2026 crises, including Iran's crackdown on protests and prior U.S. strikes on Iranian facilities last summer. Some sources suggest Israeli influence and regime change rhetoric from Trump could push towards escalation. And the pizzas are flowing at midnight to the pentagram of the Pentagon. Recent discussions on X highlight the volatility. Reports of U.S. shock and awe preparations, skepticism about a winnable war given Iran's terrain and alliances with Russia and China, and warnings that failure in talks could lead to inevitable conflict. A former CIA officer speculated that any war might be driven more by Israeli lobbying than direct threats to the U.S. The situation remains fluid, could de-escalate if diplomacy advances, but the consensus from sources is that a breakdown in talks makes U.S. strikes highly likely soon. This is the end, beautiful friend, the end. So, there was the first Iraq war, Operation Iraqi Freedom, 2003 to 2011, residuates out to the present. The war in Afghanistan, 2001 to 2021, with residual ops. And it took them 20 years and, what, $5 trillion to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. U.S. intervention in the Syrian Civil War, 2014, ongoing, 12 years plus. Direct involvement against ISIS and other groups, including troop presence and strikes, overlaps with Inherent Resolve. Inherent Resolve is against ISIS in Iraq, Syria, 2014, ongoing, U.S.-led coalition airstrikes advising. And limited ground ops continue at low intensity with recent 2025 escalations. U.S. airstrikes on Yemen. Houthi targets resumed 2025, renewed kinetic operations against Houthis harassing shipping, escalating from prior frozen conflict. Strikes in Iraq, precision airstrike killing senior ISIS leader Abdul Qadir in Al-Anbar province, coordinated with Iraqi forces. Operation Hawkeye strike in Syria, December 2025. CENTCON airstrikes on over 70 ISIS targets in response to attacks killing U.S. personnel, part of ongoing U.S. presence against ISIS remnants. Expanded counterterrorism in Somalia, 2025 ongoing. 126 operations in 2025 against Al-Shabaab and ISIS Somalia. Operation Absolute Resolve. U.S. strikes on alleged drug boats in Caribbean, followed by January 2026 bombing campaign and the capture of President Nicolas Maduro. And the U.S.-Iran crisis. Massive U.S. military deployment in the Middle East. They've just moved another aircraft carrier out there, multiple carrier strike groups, F-35s, missile defenses amid nuclear talks, breakdown and threats of strikes on Iranian facilities. No full-scale war yet, but preparations for possible weeks-long operation resemble imminent escalation. I have seen estimates that the death toll of the U.S. forces would be about 10,000 souls. You know, Trump was it, man. The military-industrial complex lacks borders, open borders, endless welfare for foreigners, the preservation of Protestant, Catholic, European culture, and anti-war. Anti-war. Trump was it. The last hope that it is vaguely possible that the powers that be might listen to the people that are. It's like in the early 90s, there was a proposition in California to deny healthcare to illegals, and everyone voted for it, and then it was overturned by a judge. Because heaven forbid, we listen to what the people want. Why is it so impossible? Help me understand, please, friends, help me understand. Why is it so impossible for the commander-in-chief of the most powerful military in the most powerful country to just say no? Why can that not happen? Why is that so fantastically impossible? I will say in Trump's first term, he did say no to some escalations. There was some bombing of targeted areas in Syria. But Trump as a whole was able to say no to the bubbling up escalation of a war. See, I mean, everybody wanted the Epstein stuff to come out, but there's two things that happen. When the ruling class gets embarrassed and when they run out of money, they start wars. It's what they fucking do. Transparency is danger. The moment that people actually find out what people in power are doing, they'll start a fucking war. So it's two things. It's the commander-in-chief of the most powerful military. And I'm sorry to be doing politics. I really don't want to do politics, but this seems worth taking a little fucking detour. Just say no. Tons of countries around the world, including some very dangerous ones, have nuclear weapons. Are we really going to say that Iran is a more dangerous country than North Korea? Or China? Or everyone's fear of Russia? I mean, hell, South Africa would have nuclear weapons if they hadn't decommissioned them, knowing what was coming after the end of white rule. So number one, just say no to war, kids. Just say no. Number one. Number two, I don't know, maybe, just maybe, the Constitution could be followed. And Congress could actually declare war, which has happened, what, three times in history? A very bad neck of the woods is large swaths of Washington, D.C. Some very bad homeless problems, drug problems, crime problems, squatters problems, crazy stuff, tent cities. Stuff in Washington, in parts, is pretty bad. I remember many years ago going with a friend of mine to Washington, and it was back when I was a runner, and I would get up and I would run. And I remember running, hey, nice neighborhood. And you literally blink and it's like, I'm in hell. So American politicians, can't fix the view from their own fucking windows. Oh, but don't worry. All the way over on the other side of the world, they can make a paradise. Absolutely. Cultures, ethnicities, languages, they don't know. Can't fix Washington, can't fix the view from your window. Oh, but my God, can you ever, bing, 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 hop, skip, and a jump over to the other side of the world, completely foreign cultures, histories, religions. You have the magic wand to make it better. Can't fix Washington, can't fix DC, can't fix America, but tunnel all the way through the world, come out on the other side, and the magic wand that doesn't work at home is going to work on the other side of the world. I mean, and you knew the cycle of late empire. You knew that the moment that COVID died down, they were going to start ginning up for war because you can't ever let the population relax. No, that can't happen. Bing, bing, cattle prod, keep them in a state of fight or flight. Keep them in a state of perpetual stress, anxiety. I mean, statistically, we know that there's almost no relationship between what people want and what their governments actually do. It doesn't work. I mean, almost 20 years ago, I did a show called The Truth About Voting. You can go and look at it. And I was pretty resolute in not being particularly interested in voting. Trump was a different matter. And for reasons I've gone into, much to my reputational, financial, and career cost, I've gone into that a number of times. But Trump was a different kind of animal. Trump was a populist, and Trump was an outsider, and Trump was independently wealthy. And Trump, you know, pretty clean guy. Definitely a hound dog, but a pretty clean guy. He'd been investigated from just about every angle. I'm sure that they tried to order his ass into colonoscopy, and he's coming out smelling of lilacs, which is a pretty remarkable thing. It's a pretty remarkable thing. So there was, I think, some hope. And if it wasn't for COVID, then he probably would have been reelected if they hadn't suppressed the Hunter Biden story. Well, we know for sure that if they hadn't suppressed the Hunter Biden story back in 2020, that the election would have swung back to Trump. And then you wouldn't have had 10 to 15 million come in through the southern border. And of course, some through the northern border as well, which has created a massive cleanup. See, they let all the people in and then they focus on how difficult it is to get them back out. And they say, is this what you voted for? This isn't who we are. It's like, well, it's like somebody shoots you. And then when you scream out because the bullet has to be dug out, the surgeon is now the bad guy. But that's it. I mean, if this war goes forward, I'm good at this stuff. I've been doing philosophy for almost 45 years, studying politics and power. And I'm telling people the social contract has seriously frayed under the Epstein revelations. Because everyone's like, oh, how can it be this big conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. It's like, listen, just go into your AI, and ask about cover-ups of CSA, the highest levels of the British government. Go look up Jimmy Savile, S-A-V-I-L-E. and his relationship to those in power. Best buds with Prince Charles, don't you know? Covered up for decades. Decades. Just about the most evil stuff that you could conceive of, and even Satan would be like, whoa, okay. Let's back up a little from that, Jimmy. It's totally accepted. BBC's never reformed itself. Society's never reformed itself from all of this stuff. Margaret Thatcher knew about terrible stuff going on at high levels, and some reports say that she suppressed material, other reports, but, you know, it was never pursued. The rape inquiry has been cancelled in England. There's terrible stuff going on at high levels. So that social contract is really frayed. How dare you tell us what is right and wrong when you can't control what's right and wrong in your own sphere and let the most egregious evils not just survive, but flourish, really? Who watches the watchers? Who enforces the laws when the enforcers are corrupt? Well, this is why I am a voluntarist. There's no answer to that. There's no answer to that. Social contract has taken a 1-2-3 blow. First, election of 2020, four blows. Election of 2020, COVID, Epstein, war. And that's it. I'm telling you, hanging by a thread. That's it. That's it. If there's war, the social contract, in my view, and in my, at this point, really adding up experience, social contract is gone. And people don't want war right now. Not for this. Listen, I love the Iranian people. I really do. I had a wonderful Iranian who was a massively positive influence to me, taught me a lot about the culture and the history, and I've known Persian families and wonderful people, and my massive sympathies to them in their struggles, for sure. Absolutely for sure. But it is up to the citizens of a country to carve out their own freedoms. I mean, if space aliens came down and said, well, you live under tyranny, so we're going to have to wipe out 10% of the population to free you, would you be comfortable with that? I don't imagine you would. Everyone thinks that they can unleash the genie of violence and then control it. The Sorcerer's Apprentice, you know, the Mickey Mouse thing, he starts trying to save time by magicking up the brooms and mops and so on, and it all gets chaotic and out of control. I mean, communism took over a third of the planet because America intervened in World War I to help. That caused Germany to send the materials and money to overthrow the Tsar, to take the pressure off the Eastern Front. It all, you can't control violence once it's out. People desperately do not want war at the moment. I mean, they really don't as a whole. But then, you know, you've got CNN selling their paranoia. And so I said, somebody posted that Fox News seemed to exist for the sole purpose of selling Middle Eastern wars to boomers, or wars as a whole to boomers. People don't want it. And they don't believe it. You know, my journey, like, sorry, I don't mean to make this about me, but maybe this is common to more than me. My journey as a kid, I was intensely patriotic, intensely proud of the British over the course of the Second World War. And people don't even believe in those wars anymore. That it's all just a blood-soaked, debt-based, parasitical, jugular-sucking, blood-profiteering off the random disassembly of countless human beings. I did a presentation many years ago called Iraq, A Decade of Hell, which you should check out because it's also a warning going forward. There are still children being born with birth defects in Vietnam from Agent Orange the genetic integrity of countless people in and around Fallujah was destroyed with depleted uranium shells used for armor piercing against tanks. The trauma, the destruction of sewage, sanitation, plumbing, healthcare. I mean, you get an infection in war, good luck getting antibiotics. I mean, imagine you're in your home and water stops tomorrow and electricity stops the day after. How's your week going? Of all the countries in the known universe, America, with its giant oceans east and west, fairly friendly neighbors to the north and south, or at least not militarily threatening post-war of 1812, should have been able to pursue a policy of non-aggression. Okay, so the Barbary pirates, I get all of that. But there's this fucking word. Well, you don't want to be an isolationist, do you? Be isolated. No. Spoiler, the country with the world's reserve currency can never be isolationist because it is bound in economically and financially into the very bloodstream of the entire arterial economic life of the entire fucking planet. You cannot be isolationist. You trade all over the world. Your currency is accepted all over the world. All of that stuff happens at this point automatically. America is the gold of the planet, the US dollar. For now. Bitcoin eventually, for now, US dollar. Isolationist. You want to be an isolationist. Nobody's talking about living in the fucking woods. It's just, I don't know. How about this? Fucking stay home until you're invaded. Something like that. Or, you know, there's ships coming across the ocean, or there's armies massing in Canada with really, really hard snowballs. You got suspicious taco stands with rocket launchers right up against the southern border, aimed directly at the heart of America. Maybe stay the fuck home until you're about to be attacked. How about that? How about that just as a possibility? Because it is my prediction that this war is unsellable. Okay, right after 9/11, there was all this hysteria and, oh, they hate us for our freedoms. Yeah, that's right. That's why they never attacked Switzerland. Switzerland's also free, in some ways more free than places in the West. Switzerland wasn't attacked. No, they don't hate you for your freedoms. They hate you because you station troops in Saudi Arabia and keep bombing brown people. It's like me going around randomly punching people in a certain neighborhood, setting fire to people's houses, and then when people hunt me down, they say, oh, well, they just hate me because I'm so peaceful and wonderful, magnificent, excellent. This war can't be solved. Catcher in the Rye. And Holden Caulfield is asked, what would you like to be? I'm a catcher in the rye. You know, kids heading towards a cliff edge, you catch them and you pull them off. Do you know the amount of, oh, fuck. Let me lift the lid on my life a little bit here so you see what it is. Do you know how much effort and energy people like myself have focused into dismantling and undoing the endless propaganda zombies that are resurrected and sent across the media landscape? Endless. I mean, the Trayvon Martin shooting, the Ahmaud Arbery to some degree, all of the racial hoaxes, and then war provocations, and it's just been dismantled. The pretty shooting, the good shooting, everyone is like, all we're doing is the propaganda is charging at the people, and you throw yourself in as a human shield to and you destroy your reputation, you destroy your source of income, you destroy your career just to stop all of these lies from metastasizing in the hearts and minds of the general population to the point where they cheer on their own self-slaughter and the murder of others. I mean, lots of people have done it. I've done it a lot too. The bullets aim at the people. You throw yourself between the propaganda bullets and the people. And then you do your best to heal overnight, and then the next day you do it again. And again. And again. But they can reload faster than you can block as a whole. And I mean, it's been worth it. I'm very proud of the work that people like me have done to stop the metastasizing of these propaganda rounds. Once more under the breach, dear friends. Once more. The beast is constantly pulling its change, and people are getting whipped and burnt and scalded, just trying to get these chains to chain this beast of war and predation and tyranny. Just chain it down, chain it down. It's a brutal occupation. It's a brutal occupation. But it's the first time we've ever had a voice like this, right? It's the first time we've ever had a voice where we can push back. And there's not a monopoly on propaganda, but there is actually a chance for pushback. I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do. But you don't have to believe it. And personally, myself, my approach has been, if you're pro-propaganda and you're in my life, you can kindly fuck off over there and keep fucking off over there until over there is infinitely distant from anywhere that I am. It's a giant trebuchet, a catapult. I mean, if people propaganda, I believe this, that, the other, whole propaganda. And if I get a scent of them in my life, sit down and talk with them and, you know, educate them and try to reason things out. But if they don't listen, then they get people killed. Those who absorb and repeat propaganda get people killed, and a lot of people. If you found out your friend was a serial killer, and I don't mean the Special K kind, I'm sure you would have somewhat of a hesitation about having him over when your kids are over, or anyone. And what about those who support war, debt, enslavement, and predation? What about those who repeat propaganda? What is their moral reality? I can't stop war, but I sure as fuck can stop having anything to do with anyone who wants to unleash that demon on the world. Hell, I don't even have people in my life who took the vaccine. Ugh. I mean, unless they had to, you know, there was some real compulsion. Even then, I don't think so. So you got to talk to people, man. This isn't even optional. This isn't even a choice anymore. You got to talk to people, man. 100%. You got to talk to people and you got to say, this is not true. This is not real. This is not valid. This is not moral. This is not good. And if it was like, yeah, but, boom, out, gone, done. Yeet. Farewell, goodbye, auf Wiedersehen, good night. Do not have the bloodlusters, the poison trumpeteers, and the warmongers in your life. Do not have them in your life. This isn't even optional. If you want to be a good person, you cannot break bread with evildoers. You can't fucking do it. And if you do, pretend you've never heard of me. Please, I'm begging you, pretend that you've never heard Freedom Aine, you've never heard Stefan Molyneux. If you want to break bread with evildoers, please, by all means, I think it's a shitty thing to do, and your conscience will burn in your skull like hell's own flaming testicle. But if you do decide that you just want to be nice, you want to break bread with the evildoers, you don't care if you're chewing on literal knuckles, sinews, bone joint material, threaded with veins, fleshy blood in the sandwich. You can eat that. You can swallow it down. You can snort cordite off the frozen heart of bloodlusters. And you're fine with that? Fine. Then, you know, I would like to introduce you to the Freedom Aine pen. The Freedom Aine pen is this pen, which means I do a Will Smith and pshoo! Philosophy extractoraneous. Pachoom, you're off. Never heard of philosophy, never heard of me. Fuck off. And keep fucking off. If you want to go break bread with the evildoers cheering on these great evils in the world, fuck off. Quit. Withdraw your donations, withdraw your support, get lost. I don't want your filthy money. I don't want your support. I'm sure I'm not talking to anyone on this stream, but just anybody who passes by. You're pro-propaganda. You're like, charge, yes, war, cool. Distracts me from the empty hell of my own non-existence. Great. I love watching things go orange on TV, including spines and children. Fuck off. And keep fucking off. Until I'm just a distant smoke show on the horizon. I don't want your support. I don't want your money. I don't want you posting. I don't want you talking about philosophy. And keep my name and my show out of your bloody mouth. All right. Let's get to your questions and comments. Thank you for your questions, comments, happy to take your support. You can tip here, freedomaine.com/donate. Before the rant, sorry, Ben, it's a little too late. I wanted to say that I thoroughly enjoyed your Scott Adams School appearance. Thank you. I appreciate that. Troy, don't quote song lyrics when war is imminent. War, what is it good for? This is empty-hearted, empty-headed stuff. Hey, I know a song lyric. And to throw that into a war conversation. Michael asks, is having a child just for the sake of saving the West and demographic changes a good thing? What is the point in bringing someone here just to pick various battles, large and small, to fight? You have a child because you're not an ungrateful asshole. I know you're not an ungrateful asshole, so you have a child because you enjoy the gift of life. So pay it the fuck forward. It's been 4 billion years of suffering to hand you this great gift of life, and you have the greatest gift of all, which is the 3 pounds of wetware that constitutes human consciousness. You can't pay it forward? Why? What are you so busy with? What have you got so much of to do? Ooh, Diablo 5 is coming out. Ooh, there was a new skin in Fortnite. Ooh, I haven't tried this particular coffee at a coffee place. Ooh, I want to go to Venice. Ooh, what the fuck is so important that you got to do in your life that you can't make life? You're not curing cancer. You're not writing the next great American novel. Neither am I, because I'm not American. I'm not curing cancer either. You're not that special. I'm not that special. Go make some life. What have you got that's so important to do? Ooh, I got a doom scroll. I got a doom scroll. Ooh, I haven't finished this level in Candy Crush. I can't make life. You can make life. Make life. Pay it forward. You inherited the greatest gift in the known universe. Pay it the fuck forward. As best you can. Find a decent person to shack up with and go make some babies. You can make life. You're a god. If you're a woman, one of the best things you can do in the world is make more brains. More male brains, even better. For some things. As a woman, your egg can produce 3 million eggs. Have babies like a conveyor belt. Just keep having, have life, have life. Make life. All of the joys that you have in the world and all of the terrors and all of the troubles and all of the problems and all of the happiness, all of the success and all of the failure, you can snap your fingers and make it. At a 5 minutes normal or 45 minutes tantric, you can make an actual human being. You can become immortal. You can pass your genes forward, as genes have been passed forward to you for 4 billion fucking years. You can pass your genes forward and you can make life. You can make thought. You can make creativity. You can make dreams. You can make passion. You can make a philosopher, since all humans are philosophers. You don't have that much going on that you can't afford to make life. I guarantee you that. I mean, I'm a mildly important person in the multiverse. I took 10 years off from writing books to raise my daughter. I used to write 2 books a year. Okay, there'd be 20 more books. Ooh, I could have 20 more books on a bookshelf. Ooh, I could have 20 more books. Or I could have an actual human being who beats me at chess after playing for 3 weeks. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Iran is impossible to conquer through a land invasion. The population is behind mountain ranges, unlike Iraq. Yeah. I mean, Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires. The British went there and failed. The Russians went there and failed. America went there and ran up crazy debt. And apparently, every single vet is on disability. Ooh, I hurt my pinky typing. I mean, some legit, obviously, but not all of them. Hey, Steph, can you give us some insight as to why there's such an emotional backlash to AI becoming intelligent enough to compete with white-collar work? Well, because... Should I just let rip? Should I? I don't know. I have a tough time letting rip sometimes. Should I just let rip? Should I? Well, because if AI becomes intelligent enough to compete with white-collar jobs, then it means a lot of people who are in useless jobs for political reasons will go, bye-bye. Right? The leftist daycare known as women's employment, the HR departments, and the endless white-collar, comfortable office, eternal finger-wagging Karening will go the way of the dodo. And oh no, if AI can do white collar work, then women might be released to actually have, I don't know, some babies. Oh, Brittany says, found my old phone from 10 years ago. Your channel name is literally burned into the screen. That's when my journey of self-knowledge began. Couldn't stop watching your channel. Thanks for everything. That is wonderful. I really, really appreciate that. That's very kind. Thank you. The purpose of their wars is to just get people killed. Any strategist knows that Iran can't be conquered. Well, but it's to get right-wing people killed, right? So leftists don't have babies. It was about 20 years ago, maybe 15, 20 years ago, it diverged, right? So leftist women don't have babies and conservative women have babies. So they've got to find a way to soak up the excess. One of the ways is to bring in a lot of people from overseas who vote left-wing. And the other, of course, is to start wars to get conservative men killed. All right. Muggles not on X know almost nothing about the latest Epstein drop. Why is war needed if media is holding the line on that topic? I agree this will greatly disappoint me if we do this now. Well, but everybody who's not on X or other places where the Epstein files are being discussed knows people and talks to them. And if you're not talking about them, about this to people, well, then I don't have any respect for you. Sorry, not that that should be how you guide, but... Somebody says, Trump is threatened or compromised. The attempted assassination might have been a warning. The lawfare is certainly a warning to comply. No, the assassination was, he actually was turning his head and the bullet. So that was, nobody shoots that accurately from that far away to only hit an earlobe. Why does he let Lindsey Graham anywhere near him? No. How can we stop the war? Steph, well, you can't stop the war, but what you can do is tell people that if they support the war, they can fuck off. And mean it. Trump loves to talk about his deals and peacemaking abilities. His entire MAGA message is done if we get into a disaster with Iran. Yeah. Iran is weak. It'll be quick. No, because you enter into what's called the fog of war. See, here's the thing. Invade everyone. Invite everyone. So let me just ask, what is the Iranian population? Sorry, I've got 300 chords here over my keyboard in the West. And I'm listing an L there. Take the L. So here's the thing, right? I mean, let's see here. The Iranian diaspora, people of Iranian origin or descent living outside Iran. So 2 to 4 million. Yeah. 2 to 4 million, right? Right. So let's say that 90% of them are, big Western fans and wouldn't do anything negative. So that's still a lot of people. That's still a lot of people. And 90% of them perfectly loyal, would never say boo to a mouse or do anything like that. And so we're talking in the West, 150,000 to 300,000 people, or it could be up to 400,000 people. So in America, 400,000 to 150,000 people who might not be huge fans of the American government if America invades Iran, right? Cells activated, maybe some nothing that formal, but all that kind of stuff. So you say, oh no, Iran is simple. And it's like, okay, it's one thing if Elbonia, let's take the company. If you're going to go and invade Elbonia and you have hundreds of thousands of Elbonians already living in your country, then you have a problem. Nothing is easy. Because everything is intertwined now. Soad, did I get that right? I'm an Iranian-American and completely agree with Stefan. It is not our war. You can't declare war in a multicultural country because you already have a number of bad actors within your borders. Imagine if there were a million largely military-aged Germans living in England when England declared war on Germany. I mean, remember what happened to the Japanese under FDR? The The transcontinental trade route is too lucrative for Trump to ignore, and if America doesn't control it, their power is threatened. Sorry, Kay, are you for this war? Are you pro-war? Like, we can't allow other nations to become equally as influential and powerful. I think that's more dangerous in the long run and could lead to an even bigger war, just thinking pragmatically. Somebody said, Mike says, I think Trump should just ignore Iran. And I see that there's a caller or two. We'll take you in a sec. I think Trump should just ignore Iran until after midterms, at least, and support a coup from the inside for a while versus hot strikes. Focus on fun deals like Greenland. Right. What about preemptive self-defense? Okay, so who is a more aggressive country in the world? Who has more troops stationed in other people's countries, Iran or America? OMG, so glad you're back. Thank you. I appreciate that. Ooh, a lot of comments here. Alexander says, I haven't spoken to my parents for a few months now, and I'm 26. It's been challenging. I'm sorry to hear about that. War is not fought for resources. You get far more resources from trade. War is not fought for resources. Steph, how do people go and protest against war? I would like very much to go protest. That I'm not an expert on that, so. Yeah, climate change has vanished, right? Because they need the energy for AI. Iran is mountainous like Afghanistan. Yes, that is true. I cannot outcompete AI for my children's attention. Advice? Up your game. Up your game. Crop dust us with wisdom. Let it rip. Steph, why do you think going into Iran is the death of America? Is it because America is already too much in debt? It is the death of the social contract. A country is nothing more or less than the perceived legitimacy of the rulers. That's what a social contract is. And that's what a country is. And if people no longer believe that they have any say in how they are ruled, then the social contract is at an end, which means that the country then becomes something else. There's no patriotism then, right? I mean, what I love about America is the patriotism. I really do. I think it's wonderful because it generally is philosophical, right? There's this sort of funny Instagram reel about, you know, people from Europe coming to America, and they say, why are there so many... there's another flag here. Do people not remember? Why are there so many flags? Do people not remember which country they're in? Right? Flags, giant flags. They love America. But to love America means to respect the government, which means to believe that the government is listening to the people. And the Epstein files have given people, you know, rightly or wrongly, you can argue the demerits, but this is nonetheless, it is a fact that it has given people massive issues and questions about whether the government listens to the people or whether it listens to blackmail through these kinds of trafficking operations. Most jobs are useless. That's true. Yeah. Most jobs. I mean, the economy is kept running by like 12 guys. That's about it. All right. Whatever happened to millennial woes? This I could not tell you. This I could not tell you. So let's get to your questions. Honestly, Mike, if you only have a dollar, please don't send it in. Please, please save it for yourself. Please, please save it so that you can get on a bus and get a job. Please don't send it to me. I feel terrible. I feel terrible if you're sending a dollar. I really, if you're down to a dollar, please, please, please keep it for yourself. All right, so let's see here. Yeah, I mean, there's a good argument that Europe died in 1918 and it's all just been death throes since then. All right, oh my gosh. I can see questions on the various platforms, yes. All right, sorry, there's a lot of comments here, which is fine. Let me just widen this a smidge so that I can see a little better. Or not. Oh, that just took me down to the end. All right, okay, so let me, sorry, I just lost. I'm going to get to your questions about what is on your mind. Can be this topic. Well, you have to keep people awake. I mean, Yuri Bezmenov and this demoralization, yeah, for sure. But you just have to keep nagging people until you have to keep nagging people until they either wake up or the relationship ends. But you don't really have a moral choice other than that. All right. Barcode, if you want to, thank you for your patience, if you want to unmute.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. I'm in this conversation. It sort of ties into what you were talking about. Maybe it's a little tangential. Do you follow this Hunter Artemis character on Twitter? They make some like insightful comments sometimes.
I think I've seen a few posts, but I don't follow them to my knowledge.
Okay. The latest one is regarding there's like this disconnect between men and women pairing, where it seems there's like this influx of submissive men and dominant women, which is not, you know, typical of the norm in society, where, you know, typically men more dominant, women more submissive across, you know, however many thousands of generations in our species. But I kind of drew a parallel with that with birth rates among conservatives and liberals. And there's this finding, you know, conservatives are actually not sub-replacement. You know, the numbers have been declining, corresponding with GDP increases and just like more interesting things to do than raising children typically. Which is not ideal. But what you'll see is in modernity, it's 22% of liberal men who have a child by the time they're 35, whereas it's 47% of conservative men who have a child by the same age. Among women, you know, obviously the numbers are higher because they're the selectors. You'll find 40% of liberal women have a child by 35, and 71% of conservative women will have a child by 35. And if we tie this to the parallel that this Hunter Artemis character was describing, we kind of see that basically, you know, dominant men, which I would say in modern politics is conservative men, because they're conserving this, you know, male dominance strategy.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure what you mean. Maybe you'll get to this, but what do you mean by dominant men?
In the framework of conservative versus liberal, it's more like, you know, the men should be in charge. Like conservative.
Okay, but how does that manifest? And I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure I understand. So when you say dominant men, conservative, so how does the conservative dominance of men manifest in their relationships? And again, I'm not disagreeing with you. I just want to make sure I understand where you're coming from and what you mean.
So per the religious tradition, you know, the man is the head of the household and he answers to God, right? And God is sort of this.
No, I understand. I understand the theory. I'm asking how it manifests, because I don't know if you've ever been to Christian churches lately, but there's not a lot of patriarchy in there at all.
Right. No, I agree. I absolutely agree.
So tell me how this masculine dominance is manifesting. And again, I'm really happy to be schooled on this. I'd love to hear it, but I haven't seen it, but that doesn't mean, of course, that it doesn't exist.
No, I'm sort of aligned with your thinking there. It's like maybe it isn't manifesting even in the conservative doctrine as much as it should be. It's like conservatism is liberalism, you know, with like a chain around its ankle. So it's like descending into this male dominance is just gone entirely. But, you know,
okay, so hang on, let's pause here for a second. I would definitely want to get back to your argument. Why do you think male dominance has declined?
Because women are working and producing, you know, at least as much as men. They're winning in academia and such things like that. So they're actually, their earning potential is beyond men.
Okay, in a lot of ways. Why are women able to get these jobs? Because in a free market, if you have a man who's 25 and a woman who's 25 and they both want to have a job, who are you more likely to give the job to?
I mean, as a man who is conservative and sees like this
just economic, just from an economic standpoint. If you have 25-year-old man, 20 or 30, whatever, right? It's somewhere between 25 and 30, a man and a woman both want the job. Who are you going to give the job to purely from an economic calculation?
I would say men.
Yeah. Why?
Well, for one, they're not debilitated one quarter of every month.
Well, I wouldn't say that women are debilitated, but okay. So what else?
They have more to lose by not being productive, I would say.
Okay. Let's go a little more basic.
Okay.
Okay. If... no, go ahead.
All right, so, I mean, we can get real sexist here. Like, the average bell curve of male intelligence is slightly ahead of female intelligence.
Certainly at the higher end, there's going to be many more men than women. But that would come out in the job interview. I say, all other things being equal, same IQ, blah, 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 same age, man, woman, who do you choose? In a free market situation, with the best interests of your company in mind.
At a bare minimum, then, we'll say, like, women who get pregnant become, like, you know, practically useless for a much longer extent of time than men.
Well, let's not say practically useless, because they're actually raising the next generation. So they're actually
obviously
doing the more important
way
job.
Way more value.
Yeah.
Yes.
So if the women are doing the more important job, they can't work for money, right? Because they're breastfeeding, they're raising children. And if you want, you know, let's say 3 kids per family or at least 2.1 or whatever, then women are going to be out of the workforce from late pregnancy until, let's say, the youngest kid is, you know, 5 or 6 and going to school or whatever, in which case, but school lets out at 3 or 3:30 and, you know, you got to commute and all of that. So the woman is going to be much less productive than the man when she is in a fertility window because she's going to have kids, right?
Correct.
Right. So the man's productivity goes up enormously, right? 2 things, right? Number one, he gets married. Number two, he has kids, or his wife has kids. So that's when men's productivity goes through the roof. Also, a pregnancy and fatherhood tames men, right? Men's testosterone goes down from the wild peaks of youth when they get married. And also, the more time they spend around children, the lower their testosterone goes. So not enough for me to regrow my hair. So in a free market scenario, in general, and we know this from the 1950s during the baby boom, very few women worked relative to today. And if they did, it was an absolute necessity. And then everyone else had to pitch in to raise their kids. So you're just removing other people from the workforce. So grandparents would retire early to take care of the kids. And thus the grandparents would be unable to work. So in a situation of a free market, women generally won't get hired for jobs of complexity and all of that kind of stuff, right? I mean, when I was a manager, I had young men and young women that I managed, and the young women would get pregnant and they would go on maternity leave, and maybe they would come back and maybe they wouldn't. You had to keep their job open for them. If, you know, a woman was managing 5 complex or 10 complex client relationships, getting other people up to speed was kind of pointless. So I just ended up having to do the work myself. So bosses don't really want that. They need continuity. The more complex the job, which means the higher paying it is, the more continuity is needed. And so in general, in a free market situation, men will tend to be hired over women. So what are the effects of that over time?
It should translate into higher pay for men.
Oh, yeah, it'd be much higher pay for men. And women can certainly get jobs, but they can get jobs where they tend to be relatively easy to replace. So low training jobs like secretary or, I mean, I don't even know if those are around anymore, but things like being a waiter or being a retail, working in retail and so on, they will do those kinds of jobs because if they get pregnant and quit, which would happen to the majority of women in the fertility window, then it's not too bad to train and replace them. And there are some jobs where women would be better, but again, the more skilled, the more training. Now, when it comes to education, right? Let's go back to university, right? And none of this is prescriptive. None of this is what should be. We're just talking about what is in a sort of free society. We could argue differently about what should be.
Right.
So if you are a university of law, you're a law university, a law college, you will be judged by how many lawyers you train get good paying stable jobs, right?
Yes.
So would you be more likely, other things being equal, to accept a man or a woman into your law program?
Men.
Why?
Again, there's a fertility window. It's like law becomes like a career. Like career is like dedication over your lifetime, right? So if you have to take time off to raise children, you sort of sacrifice that many years of experience in honing your craft.
Right. So, I understand that, but from the law college or the law university perspective, their numbers go down in terms of what they can say. You know, if they say, they want to say 95% of the lawyers we train are still working in the field and making top dollar 10 years from now.
Right.
Whereas if they train a lot of women, those numbers are going to crater, right?
Right.
So they would be more likely to take men rather than women because their numbers will go up if they graduate men and their numbers of success will go down. Their success rate will go down enormously if they if they bring women into the fold. Does that make sense?
That definitely makes sense. I think just to add to that as like a private thought, the way that federal student loans are guaranteed now, it's almost like there's a divorce from metrics of success as a professor as compared to, the funding your school receives.
Sure. Because, for all kinds of reasons. Now, one of the ways that you want to depopulate a country is to lure women away from the marital bed during their years of greatest fertility. You want to drop breadcrumbs away from the hot, sweaty bed of dirty sheets procreation that characterizes a culture that can actually survive, right? So what you want to do is you want to take all these breadcrumbs and lead women away from the marital bed, lead women away from procreation. And what do? Well, you offer them a great and fun education, and you offer them a great and fun jobs in air-conditioned offices. And then you put everything in the media that all these women are very successful and they're cool and they're hip. And the funny thing is, of course, that you've got to get all these actresses who get by on their looks to sell all of these jobs that are decidedly unglamorous. Because most women, it's true for most men, but even more true, most women don't have careers. They just have jobs. They just have jobs, yes. But what you want to do is sell them on being educated, and you want to sell them on starting their career. And what you want to constantly do, like literally Satan whispering into the ear, you just want to say, oh, you can have kids later. Have kids in your 30s, you know? Now is the time for you to go out there and conquer the world and get educated and start your career and make your money. And you can't trust men. What if he just leaves you with nothing and right, blah, blah. So you just want to lure women away and have them waste eggs. Clock, tick. Talk, tick, every egg dropping, eggs dying, right? 90% gone by the time you're 30, 98% gone by the time you're 40. Just later. Oh, and you can freeze eggs and later, and then boom, it's gone, right? It's like the, I always get this wrong, but it's, is it the trolls or something that Gandalf gets to fight among them. Is it in The Hobbit or something like that? Gandalf gets these trolls, I think it is, to fight amongst themselves. And then when the sunlight hits them because they're arguing so much, then they just turn to stone or something like that, right? So you just delay, just wait. You'll have everything you want later. And it's more fun. It's more fun to go on dates. It's more fun to start a job. It's certainly more fun. Education is a blast these days because it's so easy and it's so, quote, cheap.
Partying.
I'm sorry?
It's drinking and partying and sleeping around.
Drinking, like, partying, sleeping around. You get free STD treatments, and it's
minimal
just
studying.
Yeah, minimal studying, and you know, you get passed, and you don't, everything gets deferred. You only have to pay later. And then what you do is you graduate, and you've just graduated, and now you have to get a job because you've got student loans. Yes. Tens of thousands of dollars. You've got to get a job. And a lot of women will end up working in fields with other women. So it's tough to get men, right? In HR, I worked in HR, right? It's a bunch of women and some gay guys, right? So you just lure women, and they say, you got to get yourself established. You got to get your job. You got to get started. But men in particular, or managers, don't particularly want to hire because of the issue of getting married, having kids. So what then do you have to say as the government to as the enemy, in a sense? What do you have to say to the, what do you get to say to the employees? What do you have to tell them?
I didn't follow that last bit.
Well, you have to tell, sorry, I was unclear. You have to tell the employers, you got to hire these women.
Right.
You've got to hire these women.
Yep.
Or there's a disparate impact lawsuit coming your way.
So, Stephen, just this is a philosophical question for you. What percent do you think this is deliberate? Like, this division among women and men, the drive to get women into the workforce instead of reproducing, especially like with among the white men, women and men. Do you think this is like a conscious effort by like some ethereal body? Is this just capitalism in action? Is this
capitalism? What are you talking about? Capitalism?
I mean, Elizabeth Warren.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Everything we've talked about is the diametric opposite of capitalism.
Well, yes, I agree. But also, there's an argument to be made that women were encouraged to enter the workforce to drive down wages. Like, if you have two people competing for the same job, women and men, a husband and a wife, trying to get the same accounting job, say.
Women drive down the wage of the job. Hang on. Women were not lured into the workforce to drive down wages. I mean, that was a result. No. Women were lured into the workforce to drive down the birth rates.
Somebody out there was consciously and deliberately
it's not a conspiracy theory. They openly wrote about it. It's not something that I'm not making anything up out of whole cloth here. And I won't go through all of these examples, but the Marxists in particular are very clear about it. Yeah, feminism is to lower the birth rate. Yeah. Feminism is to destroy the family. Feminism is to make women reliant upon the state, because the natural enemy of communism is, in particular, white Christian families with a lot of children. That's the natural enemy of communism. Man. And so you have to lower, and this is why the communists always bitch about the 50s and love the 60s, because the 50s were a nightmare for communism, because you had a very high birth rate in a very Christian country, right? Or very Christian countries as a whole.
Some
so they had to demonize
growth,
the 50s.
Some of the most infrastructure built ever. Just the happiest world ever. And then we get the 60s and we get the commies in control, and everything just starts declining mathematically and across every chart in existence.
Sure. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, because it is not enforced at the individual level. Like, so what you do is you change the incentives and you make it harder for young men to get jobs. So they now have to get a degree. You make it harder for young men to get jobs. So that immediately, from 18 to 22 or 23, that's 4 to 5 years of youthful fertility. You encourage promiscuity to reduce the pair bonding, and then you force employers to hire every demographic that is pro-leftist, right? Because that's if you, and you get employers to not hire anyone who is demographically anti-leftist. Sorry, you were going to say?
So what happened to the, you know, intelligent conservative men who saw these kind of war plays happening in real time? Like, they just all got like shut down because of some common collective? Like,
sorry,
are
you asking how voices of reason suffer when they speak the truth?
Are you
really talking?
Hang on,
bro, you got this fucking habit that's really annoying. Do you know what it is?
What is it?
What happens when I start talking?
They block me. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know how I'm upsetting you. I'm sorry.
Okay. What happens is, and I've let it go a whole bunch of times, I start talking, you immediately start talking in my ear.
Apologies.
Yeah, please. That is not a good way to have a conversation. That is because, you know, I think we're trying to have a good conversation, and it really is distracting and annoying. And it's also, if I'm talking and you're talking, nobody can hear us. So it's just right. Completely interfering. So my point is saying to me, who've suffered enormously from deplatforming and so on, saying to me, well, gee, what happened to all the people who told the truth? It's like, I know exactly. If you've been around me, this show for a while, you know exactly what happens. I mean, without the internet, nobody would ever have heard of me. Because I was shut out of academia, I was shut out of the publishing world, even though I write some great books. I mean, my books have been downloaded and read millions and millions and millions of times. And I was like the number one intellectual in the world. And I was shut out of academia, I was shut out of the publishing world, I was shut out of the art world because I'm pro-free market and anti-socialist. So there's just this wall. You can't get through. Now, with the internet, I was able to leap that wall and talk directly to the people. Fantastic. But there's like a fucking Roman phalanx between rational, empirical, pro-market people and the general population. There's this giant, fiery moat. I was able to catapult over it with the internet, but then they took care of that pretty well over time, right? But at least I got a few blows in ahead of the gate coming down. Go look at what happened to Joseph McCarthy.
I mean, they coined a whole term, McCarthyism,
yes.
After him, right?
Yeah, and Joseph McCarthy was only right. At fault because his estimates about communist infiltration were far too low. And this isn't even a theory, because we now have the Venona papers, the decrypting of the Soviet cables that happened in the 90s after the fall of the Soviet Union, completely vindicate and exonerate Joseph McCarthy. And what did right. They do? They dragged him through endless hearings. He got involved in lawsuits. They stressed the guy out to the point where he basically just fucking died.
I mean, it's sort of crazy, right? Like,
what do you mean crazy? What
I mean. Like, I'm sorry to cut you off in all of this and speak in your ear, but it's just like, I feel like everybody knows your lore and like how you were just saying true things that were factual. And it was just not allowed at the time. So they just shut you down entirely, like removed all of your content for no other reason than those were inconvenient facts that you were talking about.
Right.
And it's like, how did the Christian society that we have, how do we cede so much ground that these interlopers who have decided that facts are not allowed to be spoken were just allowed to subsume all of society and create this phalanx that you were talking about? Like, at what point did we not speak up? Is this like a failing of our fathers or our grandfathers? Like, where, because now we're speaking up, now that Musk graciously has allowed a platform for free speech to exist, like we're able to communicate again. But for a long time, it was just like, shut the hell up, your whole life, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, what have you done? And I don't mean this in a challenging way, like, well, what the hell have you done? I'm just curious, right? I mean, what have you done to spread
the truth? So I'm a tax preparer. So I meet with clients in person to prepare taxes, and I describe the code to them, and I describe like the economic interests of the country. And I talk about politics a little bit, but I try to remain like, you know, a little apolitical in these meetings because how divisive society is. And it's like, you know, I'm still trying to make a living. But I don't know. I mean, I get on here anonymously and I talk and try to drive politics to like, you know, same consensus again. So I feel like I'm doing all that I can to without like dedicating my life to this sort of thing. Like, I'm not as talented as you in debate and like conversation and philosophy. So, I do what
don't,
I can.
Don't. Sorry. I know you don't mean that to be insulting, but it kind of is.
Why?
Well, you don't think
I'm
had to fucking
with you.
Work for this?
I admire you.
No,
greatly.
You don't think I had to work for this? You think I was just born, coming out of the womb with all of these ideas and arguments and skills and abilities?
It's like looking
at a really great guitarist and saying, well, you know, you're just really talented. It's like, no, it's fucking work.
I agree. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that at all.
But what you're doing is you're distancing yourself and you're saying, well, I don't have the magic sauce that Steph has, so I can't do as much. Well, let me ask you this. The people in your life, I'm not talking professional, people in your personal life, well, you have a choice. Are they NPCs? Are they propaganda bots? Are they statists?
I mean, they're everything, man. Like, there's so many people in my life.
So yes, some of them, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then the society is what we're willing to put up with. That's what society is. And if you're willing to put up with people who want to use force against you and who are corrupt, even though you have instructed them on things that are better, if you want to have those people in your life, then they suffer no ostracism for their immorality.
Oh, man, it's just a commitment to your religion, really.
Sorry?
So, like, this is, it becomes a war of commitment to a religion. You have the liberals who believe vehemently in a certain set of moral principles, like no deportations, open borders.
Well, they don't believe in any principles.
They do, though. It's just
no,
like
they don't. No, they absolutely don't.
They believe in kill whitey, kill white man.
Okay, so that's
power.
Not a principle. They believe in power. They will do and say anything with regards to power, but they don't have any moral principles other than, and they say this openly. What do the leftists say? Whatever serves the revolution, whatever you have to do to serve the revolution, whatever advances the revolution. There's
well,
no
that's
principles.
A principle then. So their principle.
That's not a principle.
They believe they're revolting against the white man. So everything and all of their morals believe and revolve around dethroning white men.
Well, but the only, not because they hate white men, but because white men stand between them and power. It's not personal. I mean, if there's a log on the road and I get out of my car and pull the log off the road, I don't hate the log.
All right. Well, think of it this way, actually. So white women are second in command if white men rule the world. And they are taking it personally.
Hang on, what do you mean?
Like they're almost.
Why would white men want to rule the world? What a horrible thought.
Well, the most power commands the most respect. You'll see, like, you know, on dating apps, white men are number one among all races. Everybody wants to date us, sleep with us, get our genes, whatever the hell. You know, it's like survival of the fittest.
Okay, but I don't want any race to rule the world. I certainly don't want white people to rule the world because, you know, we gave that a shot and it was an absolute complete fucking disaster.
What are you talking about? We got to space. We fucking got to the moon. We got satellites. We got fucking the comfiest living ever.
Sorry, as a result of empire, we went to space?
Yes. Like, we were competing with the fucking communists and we crushed them. As an indicative that our moral system is better.
Okay, how much Western blood and treasure was sacrificed for the sake of empire?
Well, empire becomes like a competing ideology. It was us versus them in the sense of the United States versus communism. So our empire, our
okay, who won?
Victory.
Who won in the long run?
The U.S.
No, in the long run, including now.
We're still winning, bro. You saw us take out fucking Maduro in Venezuela. We crushed the Chinese. Their stupid radars did nothing.
There are tens of thousands of outright Marxists and leftists educating and indoctrinating children all across the West.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. They're really good. They're very subversive.
Yeah.
But I still think like we can seize control again. We can stop the subversion. We can just get over the fact that like free speech is never going to be a thing. And like, we just have to direct conversation and say, this is how you should think.
Fantastic. So you want to seize back control. Sorry to interrupt. So you want to seize back control, but you can't even ditch corrupt people who want violence against you from your own life. Who are you to talk tough about what the West is going to do? You can't even say no to power mongers and violence addicts in your own life.
Yeah, that's true. Very hypocritical of me.
Well, no, I'm not calling you a hypocrite. I'm just making that connection, right? That if you want, you know, it is the most consistent and willed position that wins, absent violence, which we want to avoid. So you say the initiation of force is wrong, or I want smaller government, or I like the free market, or whatever it is, right? I like the West. Then people who put that shit down, you work to try and educate them. And if you can't educate them, you tell them to fuck off. I mean, how is that different than what's winning?
No, I hear you. But, Steven, it's so hard. It's like I was raised as this miasma of, like, consider everything. Consider every culture. Like, there is no right and wrong. There is no obvious solution to what we should fucking do. Consider that everybody has everything fine and, like, there should be no prime directive whatsoever. Like, that is the miasma, the philosophy I was raised in from birth.
Why would I care what you were raised in now that you're an adult and
know
better.
So what do I do? So what do I get violent? Like, is that the next step
no,
here?
No,
like,
no, no. What did I say?
I just don't know what the solution is to like picking a side and being direct and deliberate about it. To, like all
nope,
the time.
Not doing it. Not doing it. I'm not with people who don't listen, right? I mean, you know, tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me that. Did I not say several times people who are warmongers, powermongers support the use of violence against you? You try to educate them. If you can't educate them, you ostracize them. Did I not say that at least three times? So I don't like pretending to have conversations. I'm happy to chat with people, but if you're not going to listen to me, I'm not going to pretend to have a conversation. I said very clearly many times all the way through the last hour and a half, ostracize people who are relentlessly committed to violence against you, corruption, and evil. Do not break bread with violent people. And then he's like, well, do I get violent? And it's like, no, that's, but, so what that means is that he's only got an output. There's no input. And so I don't want to pretend to have a conversation with someone. All right. We got somebody else. The man they called Bayern. If you wanted to unmute, I'm happy to hear what is on your mind. Going once, going twice. Oh, I don't mind that he keeps calling me Stephen. That's fine. But yeah, honestly, don't pretend to have conversations with people. I like having conversations. I love having conversations with people. I do it, you know, 5 or 10 times a week in this sort of public arena. I love to have conversations with people. But if people aren't going to listen, if they're just on their train track, and also this sort of pretending dumb stuff, like, oh, I gave him the solution repeatedly, and he even said, well, I guess that makes me a hypocrite. So he had listened to that, but then when people completely reset and don't listen and then say, well, what's the solution? When he already said, well, I'm a hypocrite for not, right? So this is what I say, and I wanted to sort of advance this, right? So have the conversation. If people aren't listening, cut him off. Look at that. I did it in the show itself. All right. Monsieur J.
Oh, sorry. Unmuted. Can you hear me? Check, check, check.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much. Yes, definitely feel you were coming from with the last caller who wasn't listening, interrupted a lot. And I will say, like as someone who listens to the show a lot, having someone you mispronounce your name. It's like, oh, I listen. It's different if they're like, I'm a new listener, but like, listen to you all the time. And it's like, Steven. It's like, dude, come on.
Yeah, I mean, that was the least of my issues, but I appreciate that.
Totally fair. Okay, so this is a thought I've had rumbling around the back of my head. It might be a bit of a soapbox moment for myself. If you're interested, awesome. If not, happy to step back down. But you mentioned how the left has no principles, and I want to really hit on that, because I was thinking about this the other day, and it's kind of a thought I've had kind of building over decades and observations. How, and correct me if this is like too fedora, too nerd speak, but are you familiar with the concept of like a shelling point?
I don't think so, no.
So, you know, skip over as much nerd lore as I can, but a shelling point is something we can use to coordinate without like direct observation. And it's like, how, let's say we wanted to coordinate our activity across space and time without direct communication, we could infer, you know, different, we could reference different things around us to get to that point. Sorry, I forget the classic example. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going to skip that part. Anybody who's familiar with it can come jump onto it. But what I'm getting at is that, so I see, for me, that I see that one of the big values, the big practical values of objective universal values and principles, things of that nature, is that I can trust what the people around me say to, I can compare what they do to these principles they either claim or not. And then that gives me a basis to predict their behavior in the future under different circumstances, or where if they fail that behavior, you know, ask some questions about that, figure out like what went wrong, what happened. But I have something objective to compare what they say they're going to do, what they say their values are. And not just others, for myself as well. If I say like, I believe in XYZ. Here's why. Here's all these, you know, principles around it. And when I deviate from that, or I can even more so notice that deviation, because there's a part of me that's unsettled, reflect on that. Am I making sense so far? I know I haven't necessarily gotten
it. It's a little hard to follow. Let me give you an example, because I always like practical examples, and see if it fits into what you're saying. So, for instance, the left says that they're very keen on helping people who are suffering persecution in their homelands and bringing them to safety, right?
Yes.
How did that go with the white conservative South African farmers who are being targeted in South Africa?
Not well.
They did not like that, and they tried to fight like hell against it. So do they have principles? Is the principle, well, you know, if you're being persecuted, we'd love to give you sanctuary, because the white South African farmers are absolutely being persecuted and targeted and slaughtered and tortured in the most horrifying ways. You can watch Lauren Southern's documentary Farmlands for more on that. So do they have a principle called we want to be a sanctuary for people suffering persecution in their homelands? No. What they're saying is we want to use that as an excuse to get people here who are going to vote for the left. Because are the white Dutch South African conservative farmers likely to vote for leftists?
No, sir.
Right. So their suffering doesn't matter. So the only thing that matters is we want to have an excuse, because we don't have enough babies. We're going to have an excuse to bring people in who are going to vote for the left.
Agreed.
Right. So that's an example of they don't have principles. They only have a lust for power. Now, they use principles because they know principles work on other people, but that's like saying that somebody uses a jimmy because they respect property. It's like, no, they just jimmy open the lock so they can steal.
Right. Magnificent. I agree. And I also agree that they don't have principles. But also, there's this seemingly weird phenomena where we're like, oh, man, but they're so dedicated. They're so great at, like, the long march through the institutions. Like, man, they're so persistent.
Well, can you imagine how much fun it would be to get paid $150,000 a year to promote the free market while only having to work 20 hours a week?
Okay, but from my perspective, and I know that I'm not them, it would be kind of projecting onto them, but for me, I'm like, that's going to be about fun for a very glimmering moment, or as long as I can keep my excitement center so dazzled, any moral sensibility doesn't come back screaming and tear me apart.
Sorry, say that again? I just got a message from the last guy and it distracted me for a second, but go ahead. Sorry. He's doubtless going to lambaste me for cutting off the conversation, but go ahead.
That was the best thing ever. I don't know if I could reproduce that.
But you must try.
For me, I'm like, okay, it would be, how magnificent would it be to make all this money and stuff like I can't imagine that being appealing. Because, I mean, I get for a little bit of it being, it would be fun for about as long as I can keep myself deluded in this bullshit, but before my moral center.
No. Hang on. You're not listening to the example. The example was you get to promote free market, free speech, capitalism, get paid $150,000 a year, and you only have to work 20 hours a week.
So sorry. That would be magnificent.
Yeah. So the long march, that's not a sacrifice. That's great. And what if you got hired to sit around and make up stories about how everything is, and whatever would align with your beliefs or your philosophy, and you would get to go to black tie dinners, you'd be feted, everyone would praise you. You know, Alger Hiss, when he got out of prison, they everyone took him out for dinner. I mean, Roman Polanski is lauded and praised by people. Norman Mailer, like they love these people. They worship. Everyone is like, you're getting awards and Nobel prizes and peace prizes, and you get to go to the coolest parties and hang out with celebrities. Like, it's a ball. There's no sacrifice in any of that.
Sorry, there is.
No, I mean, in terms of like material and fun stuff. I mean, yeah, soul. But you're assuming everyone has a conscience, which we know factually is not true.
I'm not. And I haven't made my case yet, but I'm not assuming they have a conscience. I said I was kind of projecting myself onto them a bit, you know, with that.
Okay, so make the case.
Okay, so I don't know at what point someone does lose a conscience and things like that. In the case I'm getting at, is what I want to describe is how it seems like leftists have this great ability to coordinate over time. And I believe what it is that when you are the more nihilistic you are, the more anti-free will, deterministic, amoral, all of these things. It's a similar alignment of interests. It's not like they have to talk and coordinate, but they share interests. The more evil or the more self-destruction I can convince someone to take upon themselves, the more their interests are aligned with mine if I'm an evil person. Does that make sense so far, what I'm getting at?
Sure.
So that's, to me, what I'm describing is like this. It seems like this paradox of like, I acknowledge the left have no principles. I can observe their behavior. And if there is, like you said, if there is any principle, I can appear to kind of see there's some consistency. It's just a pure will to power, animal bullshit, or even worse. Worse than that, worse than hedonism, it's anti-goodness. It's acting against good for the sake of, like, hating the good because it's the good, you know?
Well, but see, you and I, and just so everyone knows, I know Jared outside of the show. So you and I make our money by providing value in the free market. That's how we make our money. So we don't have a lust for power, because a lust for power would block us making money in the free market. So I have never in my life been dependent upon lying to someone for my living. Now, if I was dependent on lying to someone for my living, I would have to really go all in on those lies. I would have to have an obsession with controlling that person's belief about me and perception of me. I would have to manipulate all the time. I'd have to be ready with a hair trick, a temper, or a song, or bribe, or joke, or something like that, just because I would be absolutely obsessed and focused on keeping that person having a positive view of me. If I worked for some company and I was stealing from them, like I was their accountant or something, I was stealing from them, I would really, really need to focus on keeping my boss happy, making sure everybody liked me. I would be absolutely obsessed with manipulating people so that they did not suspect that I was stealing from them, if that makes sense. And so you and I are not focused on controlling other people or controlling their perceptions, because we are making our money voluntarily in the free market. But if we were, and this is how to get into the leftist mindset, is to say, well, what if I was completely dependent upon someone else having a positive view of me, although I was in fact negative? And if I did not convince other people to have a positive view of me, I would lose everything. Then you would be obsessed with controlling other people's perceptions. So the typical example would be something like people on welfare, right? So people on welfare have to play victim. They have to manipulate, control. They have to riot. They have to be aggressive. And should there be any kind of movement to end government welfare, they would be pouring everything they had into that, because they are dependent upon the kindness of strangers, and they are dependent upon people believing that they're victims, and they are dependent upon this coerced money. And if that dependence stops, they got nothing. They already have like two kids by two different guys. They already are 100 pounds overweight. They already are in bad health, you know. So it's like all the people who've got like three comorbidities because they've been really lazy about their health, right? Like 50% of healthcare spending is just on the top few percent of people. The bottom 50%, they consume like 2% of healthcare resources. And because most of people's ill health is the result of their decisions, it's trillions of dollars a year that is spent to prop up people's bad health. And so if health got privatized, and you're 100 pounds overweight, you've got diabetes, you've got bad knees, you're like, you get all this stuff paid for. If you privatize healthcare, those people would go, they would go absolutely everywhere, because it's life or death now, because you can't get insured if you've got, you know, angina and a bad back and bad knees and diabetes and you're 100 pounds overweight. Who's going to insure you? Nobody's going to want to insure you. So it becomes life or death. Once you become dependent on violence, coercion, control, and manipulation for your survival, then you have to become obsessed with controlling other people. And you and I don't particularly care about controlling the perceptions of other people, because we earn our money in an honorable way in the free market, right? So, but putting yourself in the mindset of, it's like a farmer, if somebody is going to burn down all of his crops late summer, right? Then he's got no food for the winter. He's all going to starve. So what would he do to protect himself from people who were going around burning crops? Well, he'd do anything. He'd do violence. He'd shoot people, like, because it's his survival that is at stake. And once people have become dependent on government redistribution, largesse, control, coercion, debt, money printing, you name it, then they have to obsessively, and they have the time, because you and I have jobs and other people, their only job is to maintain all of these illusions and delusions, right? And so this is why you get these, you know, these Schrodinger's feminists who are like, women are strong, empowered when they are doing well. And if they're doing badly, they're complete victims and it's everyone else's fault, because that's just what gets them the most resources. So it's hard to put yourself in the mindset of somebody who's utterly dependent upon the kindness of strangers, who's a bad person, who has to pretend to be good to get their daily bread. You just get this incredible instinct for lying and falsifying things.
Well, I mean, I had that temptation to some degree myself, and I was like, it's not a life worth living. But I know that's a bit of projection.
Well, once you're in it, what are you going to do? I mean, and fundamentally, it's the mindset of an addict, right? Addicts are emotional terrorists, manipulators, and liars, because they're bad people masquerading as victims, right? Oh, I'll quit, man. Oh, I didn't, you know, it was so-and-so who introduced me to it. It's not my fault, you know. And so addicts portray themselves as victims when they're actually predators. And it's a pretty repulsive mindset. But yeah, they're just addicted to blood money.
Right. Okay. I agree there. Now, a thought I have along with this, because a lot of people come to this like, well, what do we do about, you know, the leftists and this and that stuff, so on and so forth. My go-to thought, because, you know, I had these kind of conversations with friends with similar concerns, is one, you know, do that kind of stuff you do, the things I choose in my life. It's all about the people you have in your life. But beyond that, you know, as a general kind of, in my opinion, recommendation for everyone is get out of their way. Like, and by surrounding yourself with better people, higher quality people, you're implicitly, there's no room for people like that in your life. Like, for one, get them the hell out of your life. Afterwards, get out of their way. It's a death cult. They hate each other the most and are going to attack each other the most, you know, or like a thing of convenience, like the crabs in a bucket. They're going to go after each other the most. So get out of the cities. Get out of their way and let them take care of each other. If you're a good person, your job is to not get eaten up in the churn, in my opinion. Mm. It's like, we can't do much, so much about the whatever cataclysm's coming. Like, do what you can, but not to the point of self-sacrifice, but then just get the fuck out of their way and let them take care of each other. They deserve it. They deserve each other.
Yeah, and of course, socialists don't socialize with capitalists. They don't hire capitalists. They don't work with capitalists. I mean, if you look at the higher education in the West, there are almost zero free market people. There are almost zero conservatives. So they don't do business. They don't break bread with their enemies. And it works.
Right.
It works. I mean, you don't even have to work that hard. Just the left is winning. Do what they do. Don't break bread with people who are immoral according to your value set.
And like the bread and circus masses, the weed heads, the guy, you know, go out and every day has got a different name excuse for drinking. Like, I know you got a small glimmer of that world. I got more of it than I'm proud of. But I know from like reflection and being there, it's like, it's miserable. Like, life is horrible and the intoxicants are just there as a, just to make it like somewhat bare, like it's their own punishment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate that. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, that is it. Thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you for everything as always.
Always a great pleasure to chat. Thank you guys so much for the conversation tonight. Please. I'm begging you, you know, for the sake of the entire planet. I'm not an American, but it's not like American wars don't affect the rest of the world, particularly Canada. So please go and tell people about the imminent war and educate them, get them to understand. And if they support it, I'm telling you, man, you got to live with your own conscience. And there are countless people around the world who desperately need you to take a stand against useless non-defensive wars and make it a condition of relationship to not be a bloodthirsty vampire to spend time with you. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I really appreciate your time. We'll talk soon.